Did you realize that only 1 in 3 children are physically active every day? Less than 5% of adults participate in 30 minutes of physical activity a day, and only 1 in 3 adults receive the recommended amount of physical activity a week. And that is even though we know that being physically active can improve your brain health, help manage weight, reduce the risk of disease, strengthen bones and muscles, and improve your ability to do everyday activities, especially your orientation and mobility classes. Hello. In today's podcast episode, we get to talk with my new friend, Evan, who is just so cool. He has a visual impairment himself and has so many degrees in kinesiology and understands so much about exercise and the science behind it. And he's coming on today to chat a little bit about the 2 pillars needed in functional exercise for your clients with visual impairments. Welcome to A Step Forward, a podcast for ambitious VI specialists who are challenging the status quo. I'm Cassie Maloney, your new work bestie. With over 15 years of experience as an O&M specialist, author, professional development junkie, mom, and owner of Allied Independence, I have been through the ringer. And now I'm here to bring you a boost of inspiration, information, and our favorite, innovation, as we trade feeling overwhelmed for overjoyed while we create a significant impact in the lives of our learners and still lead more balanced, fulfilling lives. So grab your favorite beverage because we're about to take a step forward. Welcome back to the podcast, my friend. Oh my gosh, we know how important exercise is. I don't have to jam that down your throats. But we also know that people with visual impairments lead much more sedentary lives than even the general population. More than 80% of adults don't meet the guidelines for both aerobic and muscle strengthening activities. And more than 80% of adolescents don't do enough aerobic physical activities to meet the guidelines for youth. That's a big issue, especially with all the benefits that exercise and fitness can bring to you, not only now, but later on in life. So today we get to chat with Evan Schuerbrock, who is a visually impaired fitness professional and entrepreneur. He has his master's degree in kinesiology. He is a certified strength and conditioning specialist, and he holds many other certifications. Honestly, I lost count. There were way too many. He has served as a rehabilitative exercise specialist, college professor, personal trainer, and strength and conditioning coach, and more. In 2020, he started Canaan Able Fitness to create and deliver better fitness content for the blind and visually impaired of the world. In his role, he has consulted, spoken for, and performed seminars with organizations worldwide. It is his goal to equip blind people worldwide with the tools they need to live happier, healthier lives. And I can't wait for you to meet him and get to know Evan, because he's just so cool, and I cannot wait to use his programs. He's going to be talking at the International O&M Online Symposium. If you're interested in joining us for that, all you have to do is go to orientationandmobilitysymposium.com and check out the agenda. And if you are ready to step into this new version of yourself, go ahead and register, my friend, because we cannot wait to have you. Welcome to the podcast, Evan. Oh gosh, I'm so glad that you're here. I have so many questions, but first, will you introduce yourself to our audience?
Absolutely. My name is Evan Schuerbrock, and I am the founder and operator of Canaan Able Fitness.
What is that exactly? Like, what do you do?
I'm visually impaired, and I make sure to provide accessible and applicable fitness content for the blind and visually impaired of the world. So I try to use my educational background as well as my experience being a visually impaired person to make sure that we have the most important and applicable content for us with visual impairments to make sure we're able to succeed.
Dude, that's so incredible.
Thank you.
You know, like, having your health is so important, and people with visual impairments, just due to lack of access and understanding, and I think possibly also gyms are intimidating, right? No matter who you are, a gym is intimidating. There's a lot of people with visual impairments who end up being sedentary. How did you even get into fitness to begin with?
Well, the gym was a very intimidating place for me growing up. I wasn't visually impaired growing up, but then I was a tiny little nerdy kid. I was the one who got straight A's, but I wasn't very good at sports, and I wasn't very physically developed. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to get bullied less and be able to play basketball better, I need to be able to lift some weights. So started working on that. And whenever anybody talks about the gym is intimidating or it's going to be really hard my first time, I always say it couldn't be worse than my first time, because I was brought in with some of the other kids, and this was like seventh grade, and the football coaches were teaching us how to do these different lifts and stuff. And we're going station to station. And one of them told me, hey, pull the bar up to your shoulders and then use your legs and push it overhead. And I barely got it up to my shoulders. I'm sitting there quivering, and I try to push it over my head, and then I couldn't lock it out. And then the bar crashes onto my head when my arms give out, and then onto my shoulders, and I drop it on the ground. He goes, okay, just get out of here. So I always try to make sure people understand it couldn't be much worse than my first time. But eventually it kicked in. I kept at it and wound up getting my bachelor's degree in health science, and really loving helping people from a physical perspective all the way up until my visual impairment kicked in. And then I kept pursuing things and getting degrees and stayed in the gym.
Oh my gosh. So let's pay. Was this a 45 pound like normal barbell, or was this like less?
I really hope it was 45 pounds. That makes it a little less embarrassing for me, but I'm not sure. I tried to blur out that memory the best I could.
But I think it's a really great one to hold on to, because just like you're doing right now, within the first 3 minutes of us chatting, you're able to really set the stage of, you know, this is where I was and this is where I got to. And granted, you went an educational route with it and got degrees, which is so cool. And you'll have to tell me all about that. But also, you overcame those fears. A lot of people wouldn't go back because that's heavy. And I lift weights all the time, and just lifting that 45 pound barbell over my head as a grown woman is intimidating, and it is hard. And for it to fall on you, and then for you to say, you know, I think I'm going to go back to that place. What was it that made you go back?
I think it was necessity. I had to get bigger and stronger. So I kept at it. Kind of academic stuff was a little bit easier for me growing up, because we grew up in a family where learning was very much pushed. But then I just wasn't really developing. And it was like, well, weightlifting is probably the good idea to go with there. So I kind of had to keep it up. Also did a lot of farm work. So eventually that kept up or caught up to me as well, and helped me develop physically.
Did you grow up on a farm?
Yeah, so my parents worked on mostly racehorses growing up, and I'm the oldest from a family of four on the farm, so I was asked to do a lot of things like that. So I went off to boarding school for high school, so you know, everybody else would be like, oh, Christmas break was great, I hung out, and like, what did you do? And I was like, I helped with horse surgeries, and I cleaned horse stalls and stuff. So that's what all my breaks and my summers and stuff were getting to help out on at the veterinary clinic.
Yeah, what a cool backstory. Okay, so you went to college and you got your degree, and then you mentioned something about your visual impairment, mm-hmm. and then you kept getting degrees. Can you walk us through that time, like when your visual impairment started to kick in? And you're welcome to share what your visual impairment is and walk us through whatever you're comfortable with that situation, so that way we can have a good picture. And what made you continue with school? And then we'll get to how you got to where you are right now.
Yeah, sounds great. So I finished up my bachelor's, and then I was working that next year as kind of a gap year. And I had been hoping to go to some sort of master's program for strength conditioning, something like that, kinesiology. But in November of 2014, it was during that year, I was working at a few different gyms, running a college weight room nearby, working as personal trainer at the YMCA, still doing stuff on the farm, trying to work out a couple times a day. And then all of a sudden, I had a couple of different incidents where I had a volleyball game gone wrong, and I had a very dangerous car ride back in the fog one time, where I was like, something was wrong with my vision. Had to go get that figured out. Turned out that my optic nerve was really messed up, and we knew with family history, it was likely Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy, or LHON. And eventually got the genetic results back, and that is truly what it was, but it was pretty much correctable vision. And then within 2 weeks, I was completely unable to drive. Should have been using a cane at that time, but was very stubborn through that. And then pretty much faked my way through those jobs when it came to like doing computer work and everything like that. And magically had to start adapting right on the fly in order to keep working and try to get through. That next year, I quit applying anywhere else except for the college where my sister was going up in Chicago, University of Illinois, Chicago, and said, that is where I'm going to go get my master's. So I better get in there because it's the only place I'm applying now. Luckily, I got in, went off and did that and got my master's degree in kinesiology with a concentration in applied exercise physiology, and then started accruing some other certifications too, namely the certified strength conditioning specialist, which is like the gold standard for trainers, and just kind of kept at it. I knew I wanted to achieve a higher degree than just my bachelor's, and luckily was still able to pull it off, but did a lot of courses on disability studies because I just felt very compelled at that point that I need to make sure that I understand the different disparities there are in our disabled communities and then how to start trying to close those gaps.
You just breezed over so much of a hard time. That could not have been easy. That's a lot.
A lot happened in there for sure. Yep.
Yeah. What was it that made you persevere, like, mentally?
I really relate a lot with, like, Stoicism, like Marcus Aurelius, those sort of philosophers when it comes to just, like, you have to keep charging through. I'm not the most emotional person, I suppose, and I've had some very good examples of how to be tough. Like, my mom has just basically shrugged off cancer treatments and stuff like that before and just, like, endured it, no problem. You know, she had, like, all of us kids on, like, a Friday and then was back to work on Monday, everything like that. So I've had some very good examples of how to tough through things and make sure that you're still charging forward.
Wow. And you also, like, the fact that you were in the health and wellness space and you were working out earlier when you said that you like to work out a couple times and my brain said week and you said day.
Yeah.
So that also has to really lean into your mental health, because we know that the working out gives you so many great endorphins and increases your serotonin and lowers your cortisol levels and does so many wonderful things for your body. So are you a personal trainer right now? Like, what do you do within your business now?
Yeah, so I'm a strength coach and a personal trainer from a certification standpoint. And I have many different roles since it's mostly just me with my company. I produce a lot of different fitness content that I hope can help people. I write more broad programs that people can purchase. And then I also do customized exercise programming where I have several different remote clients where I write their program week by week. We do updates and then make sure that it works for them. And it's a lot of problem solving and figuring out where it works for them, depending on the level of their disability, and then a lot of other different factors, such as mobility issues and things like that. So yeah, I wear a few different hats.
Very cool. I completely understand the few different hats thing over here. Like, I'm the technician, I clean the bathrooms, I used to be the customer service person. Like, you just have to do it all when you're a solopreneur, which is so fascinating, right? And you're learning so much about different things. Like, I'm sure you know much more about lighting and video quality now than you ever thought, you know, before. So are most of your clients blind and visually impaired, or do you work with a gamut?
Yeah, I can work with just about anybody. I was a rehabilitative exercise trainer at a chiropractic clinic for 4 years. And then I was also a professor at a college for 4 years as well. So I have kind of a versatile ability to work with different populations for sure, which I really, really enjoy. I originally started working with people when I was 16 in high school, actually. I got to work at Northwestern University and run a research study on my own. I don't know why they let me do it, but I got to work with stroke patients and how to rehabilitate them best using like $250,000 robot and all this fun stuff. So I definitely have a soft spot for anybody with some sort of giant disparity or that just hasn't been able to figure out through other means yet how to be able to get through their issues.
Right. And what's one of the biggest challenges that you face bringing fitness to people with visual impairments?
Altering habits, probably. One of the phrases I've learned over the years of being so involved in this population is learned helplessness. That can be very prevalent for us. So it's a lot about motivation and empowerment, which is why I try to produce so much content that allows people at different levels and different like bits of accessibility, whether they are willing to go into a gym or they want to do something at home or they just want to work on one exercise that's then going to be able to kind of snowball into helping them have healthier habits and anything in between. So it's really hard trying to meet people where they're at and then helping them to understand that they're capable of far more, because there's, like you talked about, the sedentary tendencies of our population, those tend to be kind of hard to overcome.
Yeah. And it also sounds like you're holding them to a better version of themselves and then holding space for them to come into that. So it's more than just finding a workout online, because anybody can find workouts online. But really what people pay a personal trainer for is not just the accountability, but that person sees you as the better version of yourself that you as the client don't necessarily see yourself as yet. And then holds the space and holds that door open for you to, however reluctantly, walk through it. Does that feel about right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you put it a lot better than I do. I try to definitely lead by example. I'm still competing in strength sports and everything like that. And I started all that after my visual impairment kicked in. So I'm always trying to push the boundaries. And I know that all of my clients and anybody that I work with is more capable than they know. And it's my job to know how capable they are and then hold them to that high of a standard.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I think that's what we do in O&M as well. And sometimes it causes a lot of friction mentally and emotionally for the person, because I'm like, hey, I've been holding this door for a while. Like, are you walking through it? Are we doing this? Because I see you as this person, but who they see themselves as is different. But the moment that they do, and the moment that they step through it, it's like they open up a whole new world. Have you experienced that with your clients?
Yes, definitely. I've had clients who have lost like 80 pounds and people don't even recognize them anymore. Like literally they've had family members been like, who are you again? And like had to remember, because they're just so wildly different, not just physically, but also from an attitude perspective as well. So you talked about how I kind of brushed through the whole Chicago era for me. There were definitely some tough times, but I realized the only way I'm going to get better and be able to overcome all this stuff is if I confront scary things all the time. So I made it after my first 2 weeks of trying to like turtle up and just stay in my apartment and be safe and just like barely survive, I was like, I needed to thrive. So I need to confront these scary things. And I made sure I did one uncomfortable thing every day, which initially wasn't very hard. It was like going down a block and walking back to my apartment safely. That felt like incredibly uncomfortable. But eventually by doing that consistently, that's what kept pushing me. And that's really what exercise is having a tough stimulus that your body gets to acclimate to, and then being able to push it again from there. So I think that it's very circular how much exercise can help us as blind people to not just overcome things in the gym, but also be able to do that in the rest of our lives as well.
Wow. Yeah, you really just broke that down so well.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're right. It's just taking like one thing at a time, but also doing it consistently, because you can't just go to the gym once, lift up a weight and be like, strongman competition, here I come. Mm-hmm. You have to do it consistently. And it really is boring and tedious sometimes. And sometimes I show up at the gym and I'm like, I will be very honest with you. My ex-husband is a personal trainer. And so when we were dating, I would show up to the gym and like convince him to go get ice cream instead of working out. It was a good time. But you know, there's still days where I show up and I'm like, all I have to do is walk the treadmill for 5 minutes. That's it. That like when I'm getting out of bed in the morning and it's cold and I don't want to, and I'm like, this is boring. Give me a pill. I just want to be stronger and healthier. But there is no pill for that. And it's just like, just show up day after day, just do a little bit more. And you will eventually get, I don't even know if there's a there for me, but you'll eventually get there, get stronger, get to whatever goals you have are. So I know that you are teaching at the O&M Symposium, which I cannot wait to hear about, fitness for the blind and visually impaired for improved mobility and function. I think that's going to be such a game changer for our O&M specialists and even VRTs, if there are some there, to be able to pass down to their learners. What are some like the fundamental philosophies that you bring into all of your programming?
The one that stands out to me is safety and efficacy. I've worked with a lot of disabled populations that are multiple different disabilities or a wide variety of mental or physical handicaps. And what has always bugged me is when people get babied. I've been at different camps, like for mentally and physically handicapped adults, where the exercise or the game will be like, they sat up and down a chair a couple of times and they're like, yay, we all clap. And I absolutely hate that. I just respect people and their abilities, like we talked about so much, that I want them to get a very, very efficacious workout. I want them to get the stimulus that their body deserves in order to then get better while also then being safe. And sometimes those actually blend together really beautifully. I just got to talk about this at an AER AVRT conference, actually. One of the examples I really like is if you can have somebody who, a lot of the visually impaired population is pretty old. So them being able to work on fall prevention by doing like single leg lunges and being able to work on their balance and their strength in that position is really good. But we also have to make sure that their body is able to understand like it's a safe position and make sure that if they do start falling, they're going to be okay. They can stop themselves from falling, everything like that. So I use a balance point of a chair in order to get people to do that. The beautiful part of that is A, they're safe, but also it's more efficacious in that instance because then because of that little bit of a balance point, their brain isn't like hanging on for dear life thinking they're going to fall at any moment. And then it actually allows you to have more muscle activation and also more range of motion. So by combining safety and efficacy, then that's where you get the most results for people.
I would have never even thought about that. That was one of the coolest stories. And I'm so glad I brought that out of you. Woo! Is this something that you're going to be helping us to discover during your presentation at the symposium?
Absolutely. I'm going to talk a lot about that, but also what different mechanisms we can use to keep things nice and safe and then also make them more efficacious. When it comes to orientation mobility, I also like to think about how that pairs well with my strength conditioning background. I like to make sure that O&Ms understand that if you are able to have a visually impaired person who's in better shape, you're going to get a lot more O&M done. I've always been, since I keep training, in pretty decent shape for all of my O&M lessons. So fitness was never an issue for me. But I know that very commonly there will be issues with the blind community. And because of our sedentary nature, unfortunately, we don't have the highest work capacity. So it's really hard to do these long trips, work on different bus routes within one day, wrists and forearms getting tired and everything like that. So I've written a lot of different programs in order to help bolster those capacities, which then is going to help people to be able to learn O&M a lot faster. And then again, really snowball those things. So I love how those kind of build upon each other. So that's going to be a big focus of my talk as well.
That's incredible. Do you find that these issues increase with age? And given that, what is it, a third of the population who have visual impairments are older populations anyway, do you find that the older populations have less stamina and would benefit from these as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then fall prevention is a really big thing that I focus on when it comes to the older visually impaired population. It's obviously very important for younger people, but they might have had a bit more of a fitness background through PE, hopefully, or just generally moving. But I've noticed a lot with older people, especially once they get very geriatric and become very sedentary, because if you kind of pair the onset of visual impairment later on in life with glaucoma or macular degeneration, something like that, with like retirement age, there's two big stimuli for like, hey, just cool it. Like you've lived a long time. You've done a lot of stuff. Chill. And then that leads to a big degradation in their fitness levels, which then can leave them a lot more prone to higher risk for falls, things like that. So those are some different things that I'm trying to ameliorate with my work.
Yeah. And I like how you said it so calmly. Like they have two big things to just tell them just to chill. And for women, there's also osteoporosis. And somebody wrote into our email about something I had said in an email a few weeks ago, but she also shared with me how she's working with older population. And, you know, if they are using their cane and then they run into something and how much more frail their bodies are. And then you're right, they are more prone to falls. And if your muscles aren't as strong as they could be, if you're not continuing to build that bone density through weightlifting, then it does make it a lot harder. And you're right, their lives are much more sedentary and there isn't as much O&M time given. We're typically given between 5 and 15 hours of O&M for our older individuals who are blind and visually impaired. So that in and of itself just lends it to like, we can do these programs or show them these programs and they can purchase them. And I would assume that you have ways for them to be able to do it at home or doing what they can at home. Or using, I guess I'll let you explain it a little bit more. Like using what they have is my question.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of online courses. One can be finishing developing and publishing within the next couple of weeks. One is already available. So I have a fall prevention program that I'm wrapping up, and I wound up trying to do too many exercises and have it way too in depth and over the top. So we condensed it into this is kind of phase one, and it's the most important for those who are geriatric. It's going to be more fixing your feet, and doing a lot of different things at home with single leg balance and even using walking as conditioning in order to make sure that people are less likely to fall. And if they are about to trip and fall or anything like that, their muscles are more conditioned to find a balance point, stop themselves from falling. I was asked at a conference recently, like, what can we do to work on people's like upper body strength if they fall? I was like, I don't want to even get to that point. If we can work their lower body strength, that's going to be even better. So that program is going to be out within the next couple of weeks. The other one that I have out, and you brought up a really good point of even if somebody is too frail in their hand with their cane running into something, that could be really deleterious for them. So those tissues need really built up. I've already published a program on Teachable for that, which is a lower arm health program, which helps the hands, wrists, and forearms all get built up. And that's actually a three-tiered program. So anybody at any level can step in and work those exercises. It's pretty minimal equipment. I also have a lot of other articles that are completely free on our website through our blog that help people understand different grip exercises or different lunging variations or even little at-home workouts or simple work capacity things that they can do at home. But if they want to get into the gym, I always encourage people to do that because there's a lot more equipment, a lot more people and support that way. It's also that built-in accountability factor. And if you can learn to do O&M within a gym, you'll be able to do O&M in a lot of different environments. Like an airport isn't going to be nearly as scary if you're able to approach a gym. But that is going to be scary initially. So luckily, we created a free gym acclimation program, which stair-steps people 2 times a week going into a gym and doing that for 3 weeks and slowly progressing in their different capacities they can do. So like day one is learn to ask for help, figure out where the front desk is, ask for a tour, figure out like the order of the dumbbells, and very, very importantly, like where the bathrooms are, like some very key things. And then that sort of like independence building tasks are structured each day to slowly build you up to being far, far, far more capable in the gym after those 3 weeks, and hopefully more confident to be able to go in and do those things as well. So I think that being able to build up those capacities is going to be very paramount, and not being scared of a gym or being able to move more efficiently and know where things are and how to operate there is going to be really helpful as well. So we have all those different resources available already.
What? That's amazing. First, we're going to link all that in our show notes. But okay. Second, you know what I took all that as? Lesson plans. Lesson plan, lesson plan, lesson plan, lesson plan. If I can help my learners familiarize themselves with the gym, that is totally within my realm of O&M. And it is absolutely within my realm to help them get familiarized with like the personnel at the gym and then see if we can role release some of the support to the personnel at the gym if they need that level of support. I'm thinking like a 24-hour fitness, right? Mm-hmm. Or even your small mom and pop gym where the things are kind of crowded together. If we can get the community involved and then going through your program with my learner so that they don't even have to do it by themselves, if you know they're high school age or whatever, that is going to be so incredible. What a fantastic resource. Thank you.
Of course. And I always love when someone brings their training partner or their support system with them and goes through that program because it's going to work even better that way.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to be cognizant of everybody's time. This has been such a great conversation. I love getting into your brain a little bit to see how it works and how and why fitness is so important for our people with visual impairments. If you were to give our community one piece of advice to help them take a step forward into being a better orientation and mobility specialist, or even just helping people with visual impairments in whatever role they are, what would you say?
Well, through my studies, I've had to learn about like motivational interviewing and instigating change talk and all that fancy stuff. But it's basically breaking down to what gets your client interested. What are they passionate about? And why would fitness and amplifying their physical health be beneficial for them? And then use that interest from them in order to then direct them towards different resources. And again, we have 50 something articles on our website. I am more than willing to talk shop with anybody, and whatever we can do to provide that support that that person then needs to accomplish their goals, we're very happy to help with that. So figure out what your client's motivations are and then leverage that in order to help them for the long term.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time, Evan. I can't wait to learn from you at the symposium this year in January. For those of you guys listening, that is happening January 24th through 26th of 2024. And hopefully you're listening to this episode before it goes live so you can join us. Thank you so much, Evan. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
As orientation and mobility specialists, we know that one of the most difficult things to do is to teach night lessons. It's just an area where we may not be the most proficient, specifically because we don't often teach it because we are not often working during that time, which is why it is so important to be able to have those skills and transfer them onto your learners in a safe, efficient, and impactful way. Because you're part of this community, we want to offer you the opportunity to skip all of the messiness of the learning part of it, learn from our mistakes, and set yourself up for success with a free workshop as well as a full lesson plan on how to teach night travel to your learners. It doesn't matter what type of learner, it doesn't matter what their visual impairment is. This lesson plan will be able to be customizable within like 5 minutes. And it comes with all of the materials that you need and links to all of the resources for you to get any tools that you might want to bring with you. All you have to do is go to alliedindependenceonline.com/travel. That's alliedindependenceonline.com/travel to go grab your free workshop and done for you lesson plan on night travel.